Hey, this is Cleveland Brown, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast. I guess your TV must be broken. Haha, just kidding. Actually, I'm not kidding. You're bored.
Hey guys, Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Happy Thursday. Hope you had a great week. Today's episode is a classic episode. We're going to be doing classics the next two episodes while Brad is still on his honeymoon in Germany. And then we will return to our regularly scheduled programming. But today's episode, one of my favorites of all time, recorded October 13th, 2014, with the great Dane Cook, a comedy juggernaut and beast. You know, I've said to this day, I've never seen anybody crush as hard as he did when he was just having that fucking massive year of SNL and movies and Madison Square Garden at the Laugh Factory. It's just some of the, you know, he still crushes, but this time when he was coming up, and he said it on his first appearance, where there's nothing like that time when you're still trying to, you know, show everybody what you can do and you haven't totally blown everybody away yet. And man, unreal. This episode is one of my favorites. Enjoy the hell out of it. Follow Dane on all social media at Dane Cook, me at Adam Ray Comedy, Brad at Funny Brad, at ALN Podcast. Brad, of course, still in Germany, so no tour dates, but where am I going to be? Well, this is coming out on the 5th, so October 8th, I'm at the Belly Room. October 9th, I'm in Florida with Adam Devine at the University of Florida. And October 10th, big show at the Comedy Store Main Room. Adam Ray and Buddies returning to the Comedy Store Main Room October 10th, Tuesday at 8:30. Get your tickets at adamraycomedy.com. And then, of course, a bunch more colleges with Adam Devine and Tempe Improv, Vegas coming up. All that at adamraycomedy.com. AboutLastNightPodcast.com for past episodes. And merch coming with the new site very shortly. Stay tuned, and it's going to be dope. And make sure you email us at aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com. Your favorite ALN moments, where you get it, why you got into it. We'll send you some merch when we read those moments on air when the new site launches. All right, now that we got the tour dates, Twitter handles, and merch info out of the way, sit back, relax, and enjoy a classic ALN episode with the great Dane Cook.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. It's about last night.
Yeah.
I don't know if we need to retread
We're okay.
News of the day from
you know,
weeks ago.
Yeah, we were, well, if we do want to...
We were reminiscing gently.
Sure. Yeah.
About how supportive comics are of each other at all times.
Yeah, and how it's just a really collective community of people that want everyone to succeed.
Absolutely.
Really,
and it's surprising how little jealousy there is and little regret.
I haven't seen a tinge of it since 1992.
No,
wow.
It's
since
amazing.
Karl Malone was jealous that John Stockton was getting more assists.
And I think that helped us. I really think it was the turning point.
When comedy
we saw
grew.
Ourselves in there.
That was the healing process.
We all saw ourselves in Karl Malone's. I do, to be topical for the first time ever, probably in this podcast.
Wait a minute, topical, is that the right word or is that an ointment?
Or is that God, what a great tangent and a great question.
Is an ointment topical?
It's a topical cream, right?
Okay,
but is the cream topical because it's on top of...
Is it the cream of the day?
cream of the day sounds like the special in like a porn store, like, hey, this is the cream of the day. Like Subway has a sandwich of the month, like a porn
Brad,
shop. It's the cream of the day.
We were up here, we were on ground level,
yeah.
And you
yep.
and I went down to where like the mole people live in
sure.
the city.
Yeah.
And Brad always comes in with that third Dante's yeah. Inferno level.
He takes it to the treehouse.
Now we got to really remember how to keep this all.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always
well,
porn
I mean,
related.
I mean, that's my job, is to bring jokes to a grinding halt or make you all second guess yourselves as humans.
Let's talk about your new album, Grounding Halt, by the way. I've heard in early advance it was leaked.
You know, it was. It's just me for an hour, great setups, and then the punch makes the entire audience go, ooh.
Speaking of album titles, Troublemaker is your sixth, right?
What is that?
You're Troublemaker. You're special.
Troublemaker. Yeah.
Sixth. Now, because
six, I have no idea.
For real? Wow.
I don't know.
Well, why don't we just count the platinum records?
We're in Dan
that
Cook's office right now, which is fucking bananas. Because, and I'm glad that you were telling me this last time I was here that was it your sister that told you to put all this stuff up?
Yes, yeah. A lot of the stuff I did not have. I didn't have a lot of the self congratulatory accomplishments up.
Because why? Just a conscious choice?
Yeah, I'm not the kind of person who usually keeps. I don't keep things up. I don't keep. I'm not.
Definitely don't keep up with.
This is not the norm for me. In my whole entire career, if I'd gotten an award or something over the years, it was always like, okay, kind of cool. But then it would end up, you know, in as like a door jam in my bathroom. Or like,
yeah,
was,
you're the guy that's like, my Oscar, I don't know where it is. Fuck it. Like,
wait a minute,
is it,
I won an Oscar, Brad?
You
yeah.
did.
Yeah, dude.
That's how busy I've been.
Listen, yeah. Mr. Brooks touched me in a way that I'm really not comfortable talking about, but now we've opened up Pandora's box, I just visually
minute,
put you on that
I
stage.
I also won Pandora's box?
Yeah,
yes.
Dude.
Yeah. Yes.
Every internet radio box has been open.
Oh my god.
But your sister was like,
I've never been one to put things like this up, and then
because why did you think like looking at it would make you settle or not or you be too?
I even as a kid, I remember like if my mother hung something on the fridge that was like something I colored in class or a good grade. I was the one that finally took it down, was like, we could probably put this in the drawer now. We're good.
Move on.
And I really can't tell you. I know that it's not self-loathing. It's not like I, you know, look at these things and I go like, you know. But I'm not a look back kind of person.
Gotcha.
So sometimes it represents. Some days I come in here, I'm like, man, this is cool shit. This is just like, this is a nice.
I'm glad you got to that place because, yeah.
Yeah.
There's, you have the.
Let's take a trip down memory lane.
I would love to, sure. Man, because this is very few people have a wall similar to this.
So we're sitting in my office. Here.
Maybe Danny DeVito, and that's just because you know he got lucky. Matilda
but
was written
Danny
for him.
DeVito have an almost Oscar.
Ooh.
I don't know.
That could be an entire different award show in itself. Like just all the people who didn't win, and then you put them in a new category.
You don't want to win an Oscar, though. Most people that win Oscars are not. That's kind of it, right? Isn't that like, or supporting? Isn't that it? Best supporting Oscar is the one that is a little bit of a.
It's like okay, we just needed another category because.
But not a lot of people springboard from that one.
Oh, gotcha.
To hire
what. Well, that's Cuba Gooding Jr. Point in case in point.
Yeah, you do. You do Jerry Maguire, and then you followed up with Snow Dogs. I mean,
yeah, but we all would have done that.
I thought he should have won the Oscar for that. Explain.
They got that backwards. I mean, when your co-stars are seven canines, and you're able to bring that much believability to the script,
you've got the cue card from Letterman.
Okay, I've got my Letterman cue card.
Your first appearance.
My very first appearance.
That's incredible.
And I don't know if we talked about that before.
No.
After I left I was leaving the show for my Letterman debut. And I saw the guy with all the cards, and I kind of ran over to him, and I was like, hey, are those the cards that Dave wrote off tonight? And he's like, yeah. And I go, hey.
You're here to criticize my penmanship?
Yeah, no, he really like stopped and kind of like he was lurching with the card. And he's like, yeah. And I go, can I have my card? Is that possible? And he goes like this. He goes, I gotta ask somebody.
Oh,
which
God.
I really took as
the giant sigh before the sentence let you know like this is gonna be an ordeal.
Yeah. I'm never gonna see this card. That, you know? And I kinda was like, oh, okay, all right. Well, thanks, man, appreciate it.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later I get it in the mail, framed with the signature of Mr. David Letterman.
That's incredible.
So that's
and let's be honest, to me at least, and Brad, you probably share the same sentiment, like Letterman for stand-ups. Even as soon as I even started realizing in the comedy world how important Letterman was and what that meant, I still think, and when he retires, I think it will be, I mean, obviously Carson, great too, but
you
as being
think,
like...
Craig Kilborn trumps everybody?
His, I didn't want to say that.
His top five lists were revolutionary, though, or five questions, right?
Kilborn. Did you ever do Kilborn? How come that picture's on the wall?
I did do Kilborn.
Where's the Craig Kilborn cue card?
I don't know if I felt the love on that.
Bonnie Hunt might be a close second.
Hold on. We got to go in the other room then for that. It's in the loo.
You have a whole Bonnie Hunt mugs and...
We have to also talk about some of the things in here that have nothing to do. Like, I have Scattergories. That's always a great party game.
And you have Beyond Balderdash. Balderdash is one of my favorite games ever, by the way.
But it wasn't enough. We needed to go beyond.
Well, the Bed Bath people thought the same thing. Okay.
Well, the
big poster of you with the retaliation with the sword is fucking incredible. Because then you also have the Sufi in the eye. And that poster is just, I don't know, when that came out, because that was after Harmful was swallowed, right?
That's right. So this was,
and that was your follow-up.
More effort.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is what in a musician or comedian's life, probably the most instrumental and pivotal.
Absolutely.
Album.
Yeah, because we work on the first one for, you know, a number of years,
right,
until you finally have the courage or the few, you know, dollars to put it together. And so this needed to come out probably within like the 2-year mark, I think, I gave myself of when Harmful, as we say in Boston, when Harmful came out. So, yeah, Retaliation was, you know, something that I knew was going to either... You know, give me a few more
shots after that,
or it was going to be, you know, a swan song, and it was going to be like, all right, but if I'm going to go down with the ship, I'm going double album, and I'm going to shoot for the...
Dude, I remember when I picked it up and saw that on the cover, I was like, oh, shit, man. Mm-hmm. Like, and then,
he's got a microphone
it
sword.
Set the tone,
you
man.
Know this is going to be awesome.
And then, that album went, what? I mean, because these discs are from Retaliation, and what is that, gold, platinum, and double platinum?
Those. Yeah, we get some gold, that's some bananas. Platinum, some doubles.
So you say,
but
like,
no Olympic gold medal, and you know what? For that, damn me.
Well, you were never strong with the shot put.
I was not strong.
What would you, if you though? And I've thought about this, and I think every comedian probably has. If you were to be in the Olympics, because you're an athletic human being, and so what's the closest that you would put yourself in to go like? Like Cool Runnings. Hey, you think that happened by coincidence? No, they were born to bobsled.
Yes.
But like what would... I love that there was just no disagreement about
no
that.
Judge.
You just had a very like, yes, now let's move on.
The first rule, we do not deny.
Yes,
especially on Fight Club, and we don't deny it.
We don't deny Cool Runnings references. But so like what would there be that you... Like when you watch any of the Olympics, is it something you're like, you know, I could probably jump into that. Or 6 months of training, no.
The only thing I ever was like fascinated Olympic wise was what was it, the uneven bars?
Yeah,
when they would like be smashing their abdomen and like spinning back around.
Yeah.
I always thought that was something I would aspire to do. And then I think one day I tried just jumping off a swing.
This is as close as it'll get.
My knee hit my chin and I bit my tongue and I was like, "Fuck the Olympics."
Oh my god!
It was at that point where Dane Cook's Olympic dreams were dashed.
My tongue, fuck the Olympics!
I'm gonna hold my sword.
Oh my god, that's a great story. Well,
and that's when
Carrie Strug was like, "Finally, Cook is out. I'm in. This is where Strug takes over." And then you've got all right. So there's a lot of Retaliation. There's a 3-disc, another framed thing of that.
Right,
and then we've got.
Yeah,
and we've got a
Canadian honors because I've got family and I'm partially from PEI. So
that's awesome.
Put a couple of the Canada congrats up there.
Obviously, rough around the edges, Madison Square Garden. What? That's kind of a big deal.
Okay, that was and that I think was that. I'm trying to remember where that was after Vicious Circle, but yeah, Madison Square Garden, my first show at Madison Square Garden. That no, I'm sorry, this was the second time I did Madison Square Garden,
mm-hmm.
and I just actually. Recorded that. I didn't record that, I thought, as an album because I'd only actually put the set together for maybe like half a year. I was doing a movie called Dan in Real Life.
Yeah,
right.
And I wasn't performing. I was in, you know, in Rhode Island somewhere just kind of working on that. I'm trying to remember. There was something else, like I was going through some kind of crisis in my life and I remember thinking, well, I want to honor the date and of course I'm not going to cancel Madison Square Garden, but I was sweating it. You know, I was not feeling
good. What a crazy thing to think, because that there should be no problem with you being like, well, if I'm not ready for Madison Square Garden, I shouldn't do it.
But then there's that voice inside your head that comes from the poor guy where you're like, I can't cancel Madison Square Garden.
It's that.
And you want to think that you can still pull it off, right?
Yeah, and it's not even just because I don't think, at least I don't. It wasn't in terms of like the size or because I'd done it before. I had done it, so I had that. You know, I did the theater for a couple of times, and then I did Madison Square Garden. And on this time when I had the opportunity to do it, it was like whatever I was dealing with, I remember thinking it was that same feeling. If it's a Tuesday night and I know there's 60 people at the factory, I was like, I'll feel better if I perform.
Yeah.
So I didn't think of it like, I'll feel better if I perform at Madison Square Garden. I really felt like the movie was a kind of giving me a certain pump from being creative. But again, there's a lot of waiting around, a lot of sitting around. I was dealing with some stuff with my family, and then it was like, no, I'm going to honor the date, even though I can look at that, even how I look at in the poster, and I know that I was in like the strangest kind of fog headspace. Yeah. And the set itself, I called my manager like 3 days before, and I'm like, hey, can we just record it, even if it's just college kids doing it? I don't care about lighting, but let's just record it for the sake of recording it. Mm-hmm. I go, because I wrote down like 10 ideas for things that I had, and I had some stuff that I knew was funny from like the year before, and I basically went in and was like, I'm going to improv a set at Madison Square Garden on a few of these things.
Shut the fuck up.
The four corners I know will work, opening of the show, something in the middle, and in the end. And a lot of that show, honestly, it's called Rough Around the Edges because it's really not a completed thing.
It's not something you did 2 years and toured with exclusively. Yo, no. And
Vicious was like insane, like, you know,
well, that was your first time doing the Garden, so you were like,
first time of a crowd, that huge hometown crowd.
Yeah,
I worked on that thing meticulously until it was like I could do it in my sleep.
Right.
In the other one, it was almost like I think I just came from eating like wings at the Cellar and then like ran up into the set.
How great is that though, to have a show like that? Because I mean, now again, with Troublemaker, this being your sixth, like to have one that is just a little more loose and like, you know, I kind of went up and I'm sure you're trusting yourself to just improvise or commit to anything probably went up so many notches if you did that in that type of a venue. Right?
Yeah. And it was really there learning that my fans were like just into me. They were into like my process.
And
so I think that even though I knew at the time it wasn't to be televised or necessarily to be released, I just had more fun with it and I was loose with it. And it wasn't until I don't know how long later I looked at it and I'm like, I mean, I kind of look like shit. And so, you know, I look like I've been in a basement. I'm like, no, I'm not tan, nothing. It's just.
It's so funny you can look at one picture, like on the album cover, and just know everything you were feeling and what was going on in just that shot.
Yeah, absolutely. It really does take me back. But it was also, it reminded me of something I saw the other day. I saw Pryor was hosting the seventh episode of SNL, the seventh ever episode he was hosting. And the thing that I dug. I'm not equating myself to Pryor, but just as a comedian, what I really appreciated was he was hosting this live show and he walked out and instead of coming out like we all like to with that first bit that you know is going to get him so that you can ride the wave.
Right, yeah. That hook bit. Yeah, right.
No, he came out and he was like, hey, my boy's in the hospital. You know, he's sick. And, you know, so anyway, I just hoping he pulls through. I just want to say hello. And it was just off the cuff and you knew it was from the heart. And it was like the seventh episode of SNL. And he took a moment to just really be human, be himself. And then he started to go into the set, and it was the opposite. Instead of a big wave, and then he wrote it, it was like a trickle, and then he built. And about 5 minutes into hosting the show, then he was wailing. And I really believe it's because they loved him. They loved that he came out and showed a little bit more of himself.
Oh, man.
And from that set, and from having watched so many guys over the years, I think, bring that, it showed me I can release this, even though it's not me at my best. It's a good set because there's no expectation from myself. I did do it at Madison Square Garden, but it was like, no, I think that this is something I'd want to share simply because I'm pleased at my performance and I wasn't trying to break a record or anything like that. It was just like, I'm really happy with the way this came out. I think I'll show people.
And that speaks to just you being in a situation where you allow yourself to create. An acting coach once told me one time, he's like, desperate people get super creative.
We can say his name.
Super fast.
Kelsey Grammer.
Absolutely.
Brad Took from the great KG. Is
McHale's Navy changed my life.
Down Periscope.
So, like, when you're in that situation where you're forced to create, that's when you come up with some of the best stuff. I know, like, the Tig Notaro album, when she came out and just talked about her having cancer, and that was just such raw comedy, and you know it comes from the heart. You know it's not a comedian pulling from a fake story or this happened to me the other day, a breakup that happened 3 years ago. And so for you, being in that state of mind, that was true honesty in that point. That was you just coming out and being yourself. And I think your fans really appreciated that.
Yeah, and I think it's a moment for any performer where when you finally let down your guard and you go, okay, I'm not just coming out here. You know, some of my earlier, I'm in my 20s, you're boundless energy, you're really coming out there and you're like, I don't have a care in the world. I just want to, get laughs and, meet chicks. And, it was just like, pretty simple. Yeah, if my family's happy, great. And there's like more at stake because later you're going, now I'm going into these situations where if I'm derivative and I repeat what I've done before, I'm going to feel crappy. But also people are going to feel like, you know what? Maybe we don't need to see him next time. It's kind of similar. It's kind of. And so I, at that point in my life, was like, I think I need to start like I had done 6 or 7 years earlier, allowing myself to not do as well. So I can get to the place where I'm feeling more complete as a performer. You know, it was like, take it off the throttle a little bit and change it up. Try some different approaches. Try sets where maybe you're, open with your closing bit and then see what happens and just stuff, And so it was an experimental time. And I was just, again, like completely, kind of bonkers crazy to have done it, but also psyched that I recorded that experience because I don't know if something like that will ever happen.
Yeah, sure. That was a great call. And you're saying too, like with Vicious though, you were meticulous. How many times were you at the factory or improv or wherever when you were getting ready for it?
For Vicious?
Yeah.
Oh man.
I mean, you were probably on the road doing theaters, right?
And I was doing
arenas and whatnot.
I was doing a lot of the bigger college shows leading up to it, which gave me the confidence when I did Torgasm and we did Penn State, and it was the first gig that I did that was like over 10,000. It was like, I don't know what it was, like 12,000 something. And that's the day I was like, okay, I think I can do a huge special.
Would you not do clubs purposely so that you could make sure you were getting the, adjusted to the amount of crowd size? And
I think that the club thing, two things happened to me that I probably didn't even honestly really think about until the last couple of years. I never felt really embraced by a lot of the clubs that I was playing. I never felt like, as a business person, they gave me a lot of, they just didn't give me the slack, So they were kind of like, we're set in our ways. We've been here since the boom. We know what we're doing. And I was like, listen, I know I'm just a kid in a tank top here, wearing, camo shorts and flip-flops, but I'm kind of on the pulse.
Thank you, Target.
Thank you, Target.
Well, somebody's working for them.
So it was really like, all right, I didn't feel a great sense of confidence with some of the clubs that I was playing. I played great clubs, but I didn't always get from the managerial side of feeling like, let's let him tell us what we should do right now to get a younger audience in here and to be more proactive.
And even though at that time you were the guy that completely revolutionized how to obtain an audience with all the MySpace stuff, they still were just like, we got it. Like
egos, huh? Just still like, okay, MySpace is one thing.
A lot of alpha dudes who were running clubs at the time. Some of them, by the way, completely the opposite. There were guys that were really embracing and like, yeah, let me know what we need to do.
That's awesome.
But the majority of it, I was not getting anything participatory there. So the colleges were basically going like, you can have the whole field house and do whatever you want.
Yeah, don't know what to do. We don't do comedy shows. So
me and Matt Frost, Frosty, my buddy who was at the time with my manager and New Wave Entertainment, we just decided to try to figure out a way to have a community type show, but still give the college the show that they wanted. Still, be able to take a good chunk for myself, put it back into maybe some lights everything was like, get some money, use it for the show. Open it up, invite people from the outside, and we wanted to. We wanted to change the way touring went, so for our own kind of selfish purposes. That way, we can get the crowds. I can work on the stuff that I want to with a generation of, people that are understand me and are hearing me. And it really, about halfway through that tour and Torgasm, when I started talking to Chris Albrecht and HBO, I was like, I used to do these shows at the South Shore Music Tent, and they were in the Round. It's where Carlin would play.
Yeah.
And,
That's something that always appealed to you, the round type
loved
of
it. Yeah. Yeah, loved it. And seeing comics play the round, I always, you know, like that. And Carlin playing the round on his special, 78, I think, from live from Arizona.
Yeah, Seven Dirty Words, that was in the round, wasn't it?
Because I think he did like a round, and there was other one that was kind of like the round. Yeah, it was like one of those Elvis-y half-stage things.
Yeah, and playing the round is just, and obviously you know this better than anyone, you just never feel like you can stay still, because if you do, there's half the audience that's got their back to you, so you're constantly moving, you're constantly animating your bits and you're mugging, and it's just it's a completely different experience than
you do
than
a
playing
lot of
a club.
Squats. At the time, I was wearing some real tight diesel jeans, and I was nice. Like, I got to get those squats, you know, with like a nice little boot cut flare at the bottom.
But, thank you, Target.
But it's true. It's like the round was just appealing because. And it played into my kind of comedy, which was, you know, a lot of constant movement. Mm-hmm. And it played to, like, theatrics, which I, you know, had a great mentor who was my drama teacher who was always talking about the reveal. Everything was about the reveal. You know, when you reveal, there's power in the reveal. That's why the, you know, phantom comes through the door at that time. Yeah. That's why the light, you know, and certain things I learned in theater played into that. Almost everything I learned in my life led up to that. What that show?
Yeah, well,
that's
the Steve Martin quote. The you will use everything you've ever known as a performer. When
he's an open micer. No,
he's coming up.
Who's this guy? Steven Martin.
I think he's got a future. He's got some
reveal
references.
Is key. Brad, I don't know if you know this about him, but when he will serenade women sexually with his body, you've read his blogs. He will pop out of one of those Jack in the Boxes. Not a Jack in the Box like rapper, but like
Oh God, I'm getting a boner right now. Just a Pavlov dog.
Yep.
To pay for that? Are we gonna have to like play that backwards?
We both had different versions.
Pretty sure Paul McCartney owns that at that point.
Just in case, like an almost version, like they do in commercials.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Damn.
Yeah, just fucking don't even. Yeah, but don't even try to make the ending even close. Brad just came twice. So
I did.
That,
I'm sorry. So I'm in my refractory period right now.
He pops out of that. Okay, so.
But I will say, too, just kind of bringing it back to when we were talking about the club owners and then.
Yes.
It's kind of phenomenal if you really think about it, how, you know, given the success of what, you know, most stand-up comics have done, there's still always kind of this weird lack of trust that a comedian has the right idea.
Why is that not going away?
I don't know. I mean, I was in a situation with the NBC deal that I did, and a long story very short, it was like, I'm having conversations with the network going, I know that this isn't exactly coming together the way we want it to be, but the show looks great, and there's an opportunity to really, you know, build from this point. And the resistance, it was like, you guys are going to put shows on the air with like talking monkeys and Anne Hathaway's choking on her chicken bone and fucking dying and coming back as an, and you're going like, okay, but look at the track record of comedians, not even just like from the 80s on up in sitcoms and Roseanne and Raymond and Cosby. And it's like, go all the way back, man. Go to Groucho Marx. Go all the way back to radio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jackie Gleason, all those guys. Yeah,
comics have the most likelihood of getting you the win because they can go and they can sit as lead guest on any show, on any radio show, on any podcast, and we can make stuff happen. We can. Otherwise, an actor who nobody knows is you're just going to be hoping that maybe somebody likes something.
Yeah,
you know?
You better pray that Danny Glover's got six great stories about flying.
All good. But and
you're totally right, though. Think about how many times Tim Allen or even what's the guy from on Night Court? This is an old reference, but Marsha Warfield. Like, she was a comic. She'd be going things. By the way, if you're playing at home, drink seven for the first Marsha Warfield reference.
Good Lord.
But, like, yeah, like I can't tell you how many times we'll see actors go on
late
talk
night
shows.
Panel, whatever.
And, you know, some of them are naturally funny, but a lot of times it's like, man, it's like a – it's like pulling teeth to like see them try to like, they always think their story is funny, but but then it just sometimes just doesn't translate because you're like, you're just missing the beats. You're just not, right. you're not finding what it is about that that's relatable to us. And right. that's what a fucking comic does.
Yeah. I just, I always, you know, I don't know, if I found myself in that power position, it's like, I'm always going to bet on a comic.
Sure.
I'm always going to take the gamble on the comic versus just an okay show with a person that nobody really
yeah.
knows about, because right. a comic is going to get out there and
that and that's all we think about. A comic's only job is to be funny, so that's literally the only thought that's in our head. So when some executive's telling you, well, this is the schematics and it doesn't quite work, people haven't really done this before, you're like, yes, but you're in the business of being funny. That is all you know,
right.
and it consumes your life. So when you go to do a show, you're not going to say something that you're like, no, that isn't going to work or hasn't been tried out or hasn't been tested by you in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
You know funny. If you didn't, you wouldn't be in the situation where they're giving you a show.
Yeah. This one time I saw Tony Danza on Jay Leno, and it was like – and he was like, oh, so Tony, I hear you've got the Tony Danza talk show coming out. And so have you hosted anything before? And he's like, yeah, well, actually, Jay, I did host I hosted this talent show when I was in the eighth grade. Funny story, actually. Which, by the way, don't preface with funny story when it's not going to be a funny story. And he goes, funny we'll story, actually, that. Jay. And he's like, oh, please tell about it. And hurry up, though. We have a Google Doll over here. And so and Tony's like, yeah, I was hosting this show in the eighth grade. And we're doing this big skit where I come out in this bear suit and I scare the principal because she hated bears. So I come out in this bear suit, but they had forgotten the hat, the lower half of my bear suit. So I'm wearing a bear head and jeans. So, boy, it was pretty crazy. And then Jay's like, okay, great. So watch the Tony Danza show. It was just like, okay, man. Like, that's what's way to sell the show.
Now, I've got a question for you because you've done this now six times. You've done this is your sixth special or sixth album?
You know,
just lose crap.
Every special becomes an album, right?
No, I don't think – no. Yes. Okay.
Well, Harmful wasn't like a – that was just an album, so there's video proof.
Yeah, you'd think I would know this. I have no clue.
But I mean, but basically what the question is you continuously – you put out a special, you put out an album, you immediately have to wash all the material, just put it all out because your fans are so diehard, they'll know anything.
Now, when do you get to that point where you realize – like, do you have to get rid of it? Like, is the comedy police going to come down, or do you just know that you get to a point where you have millions of people – who want to see you, so you basically, by principle, can't come back with
I think
the
if
same
you're,
shit.
You know, it's that thing, if you're doing it in the right order, then you're mm-hmm. working up to the special, you've been working the material, and then you can record it, and then you can let it go. I'm not like a let it go the next day kind of person. You know, some people, mm-hmm. I guess, I don't know, that's their thing. It's like, I do like to start a new year off with new ideas and new material. So
So January 1st is your, like, reset button.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, it's like even if I have some stuff, now there's like carryover or I'll look through like something I did 2 years ago and go, oh, that whole bit, I never did it anywhere. There's like 20 new minutes that I found from two tours ago that I was like, man, no, now I have a better idea of how I would do that. So I'm like reconstructing
That's
certain
awesome.
Bits. Yeah, there's definitely no... There's no, you know, one rule that's like, oh, no, we have to, like, shut everything down and start mm-hmm. over. And yet I do, once I finish something, like to, you know, kind of let it peter out and then, you know, start a whole new set in the new year.
Because you did a whole theater tour leading up to Troublemaker, right? And then
right.
shot it in Vegas. Over how many nights again? It was like
40. And it was very expensive, Adam. Because I only used one of the nights.
I mean, you know, Celine Dion had a month off, so you had to come in and do anything.
I did two. I just did two shows. I did the Friday, Saturday night. And it was completely it's unlike anything else I've done because I did it all myself. You know, I put the money up for it. I didn't have a partner previously. It wasn't like I had you know, HBO or Comedy Central, anybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was completely free and clear to do something.
Now, how does that process differ from doing it with a partner, a brand that's, you know?
It differs.
But you're a brand, so I guess you were like.
Yeah, it's funny because it didn't feel really different until I started getting to production time because everything else is just like work on the set, mm-hmm. go to the club, work on the set, sit at home, sit around and, you know, try, you know, notions that turn into ideas. And then finally you're, you know, at the Laugh Factory or the Comedy Cellar or something going, okay, this now it's starting to feel like a show.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And fortunately for me, because I wasn't necessarily going to do it during that tour, but I was like, no, I have these two shows in Vegas. And even though I know it's not the right idea to film anything in Vegas, it's a real crapshoot.
Jesus. You're really rolling the dice.
It really is.
Thanks, Dane. I think we're going to wrap up right here.
Oh, man.
But no, you're right, because that's such a tourist town. It's not necessarily your core fans that are in a city waiting for you to show up. Like, it's some people that, you know, it's not your typical comedy audience.
I didn't mind that. I didn't mind that some of the people in the audience would not be my audience. Mm-hmm. I actually welcome that a bit.
Because you want to convert them, maybe?
Yes, we have a baptism.
There you go.
I have a pool of sweat, and I dip you in my
welcome
sweat.
To the Church of Dane.
No, I think it's because I liked the idea that, like New York, it would be a real mix. Mm-hmm. I gave people enough heads up, so I had fans coming in from, you know, all over the place. And then I knew that there would be people that were just kind of, you know, I liked having that energy in the room that was like, you know, man, there's people here who maybe have never seen me.
Mm-hmm. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Makes you work a little more, right?
Yeah, I was joking about this thing on stage the other night going like, there's certain things about now that I love about people either having a total opinion and not really liking what I do, or just being ambivalent. Like, I kind of crave and enjoy that as much as I love performing directly for my fans. And I was kicking it around going like, there's so many so many things I haven't felt in years. Like, I haven't been vouched for. I missed being vouched for. It's been years since somebody's like, no, he's cool.
He's
like,
good, yeah.
I haven't had somebody vouch. Wow. Like, literally
what a crazy
me, like,
just exchange. Oh, that,
yeah,
you...
That weird little thing of just like having somebody, you know, people are going to look at me and be like, oh, you, okay, yeah. But I miss being vouched for. I miss having somebody be like, no, let him in, man. He's cool. This is a good guy. And having to kind of come in and earn my spot. Mm-hmm. I like that. And so it's this element with this show of like... And it really showed on the Friday night show, because the Friday night show was not an easy show. There was a lot of mistakes and a lot of things that happened on the show that were kind of unsettling. You know, things that, you know, especially being on the creative side of it, I was like, man, this could you know, damage the, you know, my investment.
Did you start panicking at all, like, oh, holy crap, what have I got myself into?
I didn't really panic until I was back at my hotel room after the Friday night show. Was a good show. Mm-hmm. There's pieces of the show in the special, and funny is that I actually appreciate now that the show kind of went south, but the Friday night show, there were some technical problems. There were some problems with the timing, and the crowd wasn't where it was supposed to be. So some people weren't there, and some people were moving around. And so I was in my head on stage going like, oh, man, this is a wash. I can't, you know, this. I'm not going to use this. And so immediately I went into a different attitude.
Yeah.
Then Saturday night, then I'm freaking out a little bit. I didn't panic, but I'm definitely like,
you got two shows left.
I got one show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit.
And I'm going, okay, at that very moment, I'm going, fuck this show. I'm not using Friday night show. And then I had this moment on Saturday morning where I was like, if this show doesn't go well, I have the most expensive home video ever made that nobody will also want to watch, because it's not even a good show. So, yeah, I had a little bit of my, you know, freak out. Went to my crew and was like, you know, what can we do to make sure the, you know, A, B, and C are in place so that I can not think and really just have a good time. And the Saturday show was the show.
The one.
You know, really, it's what...
It's funny how those things just come together like that, right?
It came together and then it exceeded my expectations.
Awesome.
You know, I always write... That's like one thing I write down. You know, I want to exceed my own expectation for me.
Yeah.
You know, and if I do that, then somebody will see it or feel it. So I'm not thinking that for you. I'm thinking for me. Like, let me find something in here that, you know, takes me to a different, you know, place in my performance, to where I'm like, wow, I never felt this kind of fear and excitement at the same time. I still look for those.
Was there a moment in the Saturday show, a few jokes in, where you, in your head, you go, oh, yeah, this is going good?
Almost immediately.
Yeah.
Almost the second I got out there, I felt like... and this kind of sounds like a cliche, but I really knew that I was doing one of the best shows that I've ever done in my career. I knew that I was, I knew that I was completely at the helm instead of how we always kind of feel, which is like there's kind of like that back and forth sometimes with the crowd. Sure. You know, like, you still with me? Or,
right.
You know,
the, just kind of checking up on
this
him.
Show
and,
was
no.
like...
Did you have the added pressure on yourself? Like, I got to get it, though?
I did. And I think that's what brought that out.
It helped. It didn't hurt.
It was what I needed. I needed to get, you know, my ass kind of kicked the night before and to not lean back. Because if the Friday night show is like, a good show, oh, it was a great show, dude. Instead of feeling like it was something unique, I might have just had a great show Saturday and felt like, okay, I just have like an okay special.
Wow.
Instead of capturing something that you're always hoping with cameras in the room.
Yeah.
That I'll get.
Well, it's funny you bring up that pressure brought that out of you, because I remember you tweeted something, I think it was last week, and I texted you after I read it, because you said, pressure creates diamonds, but it also crushes skulls.
Yeah.
And I read that quote, and I was like, holy fuck. Like, that's something that us in show business and really in life, you really need to realize sometime. Like, yeah, it's going to get tough, but out of that pressure, you can create something amazing,
right.
Or... you can let it get to you.
Yeah. I was watching a thing.
Where's that quote from, by the way? Because that's definitely not something on a Bazooka Joe rapper.
No, though.
Or maybe it is. I don't want to fucking assume what Joe's up to.
No, I'm. Trust me. I got all the Joe volumes. And I get written transcripts of all the Joes.
Yeah.
Where did it come? No, I think it was because I'd heard the quote about diamonds, and I was like, well, yeah, as a performer or somebody that like has decided to embark on what we do.
Yeah.
People, you know, only we really know how difficult it is and how important it is to us. I don't think people really can honestly say like, oh, performance, like, I know that must be important to you, but I know how it is important to you guys. And I know how important it is to find something new in yourself and to, you know, and to get laughs and to feel present in that moment. But I was watching a thing about submarines actually. And,
wow, back to down Periscope. I knew we were going to get back there somehow. Yeah.
Full circle, Kelsey Grammer.
And Kelsey, we're watching.
Oh, there you go.
Together. And Suzanne Plachet. She comes over from time to time. And John Larroquette. I like people with last names that
are fun to pronounce.
And this is so funny. And it's, again, kind of indicative of maybe how we see ourselves. I'm watching the thing about the how these submarines were originally built. And then finally they're talking about, you know, the submarine went down, and then they call it at a certain depth, hull crush depth.
Ugh.
And it happens like this. It's
yeah.
A fraction.
Instant.
You're there, and then you're like a centimeter away, and you're at something called hull crush depth. And immediately my reaction was, oh, like us, like performers. Like,
wow.
I related to that feeling.
Wow.
As a performer of, oh yeah, we, you know, we have to, you know, monitor ourselves and keep ourselves in a certain level, because we will, you know, we'll get so down or so hard on ourselves, and or sometimes the business is just, you know, you're in, you're out, it gets it, you know, that pressure. So that's where that tweet came from.
You mentioned expectations with that, like, Friday night show and what you like had for it. What are your, like, I just got curious, like, what are Dane Cook's expectations of Dane Cook? And have they changed?
And can you answer in third person, please?
And can you answer as James Lipton asking Dane Cook? No, but
I will say, if I ever got to the gates of, what does he say, heaven?
The pearly gates.
I've always thought about this.
For
I
sure.
Think the, I think the worst thing you could hear the Lord say is just to look at you and go, and you are...
I'm Master Square Garden. I did what you designed
you
me
are.
To do.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I designed you to be a carpenter. I don't know what the fuck you did
I
the stand-up
the
thing.
I played the Raft Scaler in 1996. They threw hot dogs at me. I survived it.
You would be a great guest on that show, by the way.
On
Inside the Actor's
Studio.
Because, hey, man, TV.
You think Good Luck Chuck has
Mystery Men? You don't think Mystery Men? You don't think the Waffle Man's not going to fuckin' be discussed?
The Waffler.
I'm sorry. God damn it. I know. I'm sorry. I knew at least what breakfast treat you were fucking.
When you decided to do.
Get Silverstone in this manner, if she was on the pod.
That would. Yeah, but come on, man. There's.
When you decided to bring.
He doesn't have a lot of comics on either. And I think to get both those worlds, like, just the transition from like stand-up to movies, but like the fact that you've done both, and I don't know, man.
Yeah, I would like to, because I saw Chappelle on there.
Yeah.
I remember feeling like,
That's fascinating.
Yeah, I love sitting at the comic table, but I also like, you know, I like actors in a different way, but mm-hmm. I love talking to actors about how they approach, especially actors that, you know, we grew up admiring and, you mm-hmm. know, like a Kevin Costner and being like, Untouchables, how did you, you know, or scenes with Gene Hackman. And so I would like to be able to, selfishly, yeah, I'd love to be able to sit there because you want somebody to ask you the questions that you go, yeah, man. Yeah, you're tapping into something that I've never had a chance to really.
1,000%.
Yeah.
Because that happened.
Same with you guys.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, you feel that with our down
this
Periscope
podcast
references.
Has helped shape you as a performer, but that's what we're saying right now. But no, the first time we did this at your place, remember the first story you even talked about getting this house and how you saw E.T. and wanted the house with the, remember?
I do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you said you never thought about that, and that immediately made me go, A, like, man, we do have the greatest podcast of all time. And B, like, what a great avenue for discussion that, like, that created, like, stuff for you to think about that you hadn't thought about and talk about.
Well, and I think that's also why these actually in podcasters are at their best when the right two, you know, comedians get together or performers. We know how to ask that one question that maybe somebody else is afraid to ask or not at liberty to ask. Mm-hmm. And it's really great to be able to, you know, kind of get down to the, you know, talk about, you know, diamonds and, you know, being, you know, skulls being crushed. But the mm-hmm. truth is, yeah, well, once we kind of get that stuff up, people don't realize that these conversations, you know, kind of help us to, you know, change our own perspective on ourselves. So
absolutely.
You're going into something tomorrow and starting the work week going like, all right, wait a minute. You know, now that I kind of brought all that stuff up, you'd be surprised at what we can, you know, garner from great conversations like this.
Also, the Inside the Actor Studio audiences are these kids that are always so eager to gain some sort of like to be inspired and like. And the people who are on stage usually have a body of work and also experiences. And it's like even that story you told about how you got Mr. Brooks, like Costner saw you do stand up, right? And then you sent a tape.
I sent a tape.
Of your audition to him because you had met him through a show. And like that's – and people would look at you and just be like, oh, you got that role because you're Dan Cook and you got to audition for it. And so like that story to me would be so worthwhile
and
to tell.
I shouldn't have gotten that role because I'm Dan Cook is the truth.
Yeah.
Because at that
it's
time –
it's a dramatic role. You were known for being the goofy guy.
Everybody casting directors would say like, oh, we know him. We got him. We know what he does, which is, you know, what this – town can do, and that's frustrating. But yeah, I shouldn't have gotten that role, but I was, you know, tenacious and I put myself on tape.
Yes.
I did all the stuff we don't normally want to do or we think is going to lead to nothing.
And I think that side of it would be great for those kids here because like a lot of those people that great actors, and maybe I'm wrong, but like don't have those like I'm sure Pacino wasn't like, can I just really fucking well, that's, you know, he doesn't curse a lot when he fucking.
You know, every time you do an impersonation, this weird phone rings.
It's like God's trying to interrupt you. God's like, that's not really good Pacino.
Better Pacinos. Stop butchering it. But, you know, like, they're more just like, just, you know, do the work and audition and hope for the best, I feel like. And not. Right. You don't hear.
Dude, do an impersonation.
I was about to go into my Betty White, so that was well-timed. No, but in all seriousness.
Wait, what is that ring? I've lived in this house 4 years. I've never heard that ring.
Are you serious?
Whatever that... You got this one is making a chirp, and then in the other room it rings for like 4 minutes straight.
Do you have a dwarf alarm or something that you didn't know about, and I just walk into the room?
I don't
know.
Dwarf alarm. I'm not aware of that.
God, you rich people, and you're... What can't money buy at this point? dwarf alarm.
But the expectations, because I really am curious how... with Troublemaker versus like Retaliation or Vicious Circle, mm-hmm. like the we've gotten into how like the process was different because with Vicious Circle you were just so adamant about like I mean meticulous with doing it in your sleep. Were you like that with Troublemaker or was it more like I'm more in control. I've done this before, like so I don't need to kill myself with the preparation.
Everything. It's everything. It's like all the pieces I learned along the way. It was, you know, big shows and great shows, and that was such a massive production. I wanted to do Troublemaker. Like my whole thing with Troublemaker was I'd been watching a lot of like great like bootleggy early stand-up stuff, you mm-hmm. know, right around the prior Live at Sunset Strip, you know, era. And so I wanted it to have a little bit of a throwback. I wanted it to be real, like a small crew. I didn't want it to be about the production value. I wanted it, but I wanted, you know, great people that could capture what I was looking for. And I wanted it to be kind of bare bones, but I also wanted it to be of what I think is like the way, you know, this next, you know, generation views content, which is you will watch a YouTube video of, we just talked about Chappelle, of Chappelle, on a cell phone camera, sideways, with a light behind him that's so bright, it's making him look like he's, you know, just completely illuminated.
Yeah.
And you'll see hundreds of thousands of views. It to me, I was watching those things going, it's not about like the way the camera's going to move or how great the backdrop is. It really is about like, how can I capture this in a way that's like very current?
Yeah.
Has that energy, you know, of being very like, you know, the way down, kind of bare bones, like I said. Mm-hmm. And so all the stuff that I did here was like, yeah, let me take from the things that I didn't want to do again, or that I feel like I've already had the opportunity to play around with, and let me do it again, but as simple as possible, so that it's just about the show this time. It's not about the garden. Isolated mm-hmm. Incident was one tracking shot. It was 60 minutes of one shot, no edits. So, you know, kind of like cool gimmicks that I put in there that I thought would accentuate something different. This is entirely about performance. It's 100% about performance. I don't want you to really see the camera work. That's the thing. These other things, you'd be like, wow, 18 cameras in the garden. And
sure.
This is like about me and my show.
So there's not a lot of quick cuts, wide to close. Well, maybe a few of those.
Not real. Like maybe like a couple of the back, you know, shots. Yeah. Like a couple of those shots from. But no, it's really mostly about just, you know, capturing what I'm, you know, the routine.
Yeah.
And it's also the first time that because of the Friday night show and because of what you know, the way I was in my head that night, when I finally watched it back, I was like, that's actually more of what I should be using. And I cut a lot of the Friday night show in, because even though it wasn't the most polished, because maybe I wasn't as on, I wasn't not professional. Just don't want you to think I hung my hat and I gave a great show. It just wasn't, I was in my head.
Most
people would never even notice. Yeah. But
you're also your harshest critic.
I'm my harshest critic, but I know that I downshifted, mm-hmm. and that downshift was when I watched it, was like a eureka moment, because I'm like, no, this, I actually enjoyed that show, and I didn't try as hard, and so therefore, the pieces that I used from Friday, I think are some of the standout pieces.
Awesome.
I'm psyched that it's just... It's really, it's not about anything other than the material at this point, which is really cool.
October 17th on Showtime.
October 17th on a network called Showtime. You've heard of this?
Yeah,
network?
I've heard of it.
You know, they devote an hour to Dexter and an hour to Homeland, and now they're going to devote an hour to Dane Cook.
We did derail, though, off my answer, because we got into our mutual adulation for James Lipton. But what, like, in all seriousness, like, what, when you wake up, like, what are your expectations for yourself at this point? And going into that show, I guess, secondary.
Secondly. For going into Troublemaker or now?
Well, in general, just right now. Like, what are you for yourself right now?
More
after everything on that wall, you know?
Yeah, it's honestly, it's like I have a whole different slate of things that I want to do that are not in competition with stand-up comedy. You know, I've been working on a new hour since this one, so that was last, you know, November.
Jesus.
So I want to film something new by, you know, December or even January.
Oh, no shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's insane.
That's the thing now. I'm back in the cycle of worked on the material for a year and a half, record it, then I can start working and then hold it and air it later. So I'm actually airing it, been working on the new stuff, and then by the time that airs, people are coming out to see me.
I've
got new stuff. I've got at least 45 or 50 minutes, and then this stuff, I've got like 2.0 version of it. If I kept
stuff they haven't seen yet. So when you go on this, you'll go on another tour before you film the next one, just to like run
it. I'm gonna try to figure that. I'm definitely gonna do a tour before the film the next one. I don't know when,
but you won't
New York Comedy Festival in November.
Nice, but you won't do anything from Troublemaker, or maybe some stuff.
It just depends. It really depends on like what the new material. Sometimes I'll use a couple of pieces to get me into some new material. Yeah. But I'll change it. So it's like a newer version of... It's never done, you know? That's the thing.
Yeah.
It really is... A bit is never... There's only a couple of guys, I guess, like a Seinfeld, that you really do feel like, all right, that's it. Nailed it.
It's strange that way, because in... Different from musicians, once they have the song and it's on the album, okay, it's done.
Yeah, nobody's going back and changing Susu Studio. It's...
Well, Metallica did like Unforgiven 3, right?
They kind of
like...
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like, but comedians, we still can go back and change. You can still go back and find that one part that you didn't see before. You're in, and things are constantly in flux. And I think that's what makes it so fun to be a comic, is that you are never done. You can never just sit back and be like, I'm good. I've done it all.
And you really, we use everything. It is that Johnny Carson quote of like, when he said, when he was hosting the Tonight Show, it's like, you use everything. You use something that, he's like, I one time pulled something out that I, when I was 8 years old, a funny thing I used to do for my family. He goes, and I'm doing it now with, you know, Dom DeLuise or whoever his guest was. He's like, we use everything. So a few years ago, I would be like, no, once I'm done with that piece of material. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like, well, no, sometimes because there's only so many topics. Yeah, if I'm talking about relationships, I might bring that little piece in to help me flush out this new stuff because it's helping me to find an entry point. If I don't use that little piece just because I've said it before, am I doing myself a disservice? I'm trying to find my way around something.
Sure.
So I'll just, you know, kind of extract it later, and then I've got a new piece of material.
And sometimes that old bit triggers a new thought while saying the old bit, and that can add to the new joke. So it all helps, and it certainly all supports.
And I don't want to sound like somebody not in the stand up comedy world who is not appreciative of you building a new hour by saying what else after that, because I know that's like, I've heard that from so many people at your level. I think Whitney said it on the Today Show where they were like, I think Hoda and Kathy Lee were like, so you've got this new hour and then what else? And she was just like, I mean, that's a pretty big deal. Like, do we have to skip over that so quickly? So I don't want to do that, but...
I think what else...
But is that it?
No.
I'm just saying.
What else you got?
And that was my Kathy Lee impression,
Dane,
by the way.
Are you going to be retiring anytime soon? Yeah, Jesus. And if so... The things that I've been working on, like now, I got a movie that I EP'd, which
400 days, right?
Days, yeah, that's done, and we're getting that for festivals. I want to do that route. I've always wanted to have a great film and do the whole festival route. I've never been able to do that, so I'm hoping that
fuck yeah, dude. That.
And this, the 400 days, that's you in space? It's astronauts?
It's in a simulator.
Your voice went up super high when you said space.
Space? Well, I try to do like a Twilight Zone effect. Like, space!
Oh, I like that. Ah. Wow.
The dwarf alarm should have gone off right there. You
know, yeah, exactly.
Elton, the sound effects.
Sure. That's what I bring to the table. You don't see Charlie Rose doing space sound effects. That's all I'm saying.
That would be a great B-sides, Charlie Rose. We're not in space. We're in a simulator. It's a psychological thriller about four astronauts in a simulator preparing for long-term space travel. And once we're in the simulator, you know, we can't leave. It's like we leave, we lose our opportunity to, you know, go on a mission to Mars. So what starts off is like kind of one of those, you think it's going to be like kind of like one of those whodunit type things with the four people trapped in the simulator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But an event happens, and from this event, we start to wonder if it's really a simulation. So through the course of the film, and you don't know if I'm good or bad. Mm-hmm. Katie Lotz is in it from Arrow. She's nice. Awesome. Ben Feldman from Mad Men.
Yeah, right.
Brandon Routh, who was Superman before the Superman now. So it's a great cast. And
when does that come out?
So we're going to finish it and hopefully get the festival out. And then I've got a big movie, big comedy that we're just in the process now of budgeting, and something I wrote with a really funny writer for the last about year and a half. So more producing. Yeah, and more just creating my own content.
Yeah. And probably more voiceover, right? Planes 2, Fire and Rescue seem to do pretty well.
It did okay, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
You never know. It's like you can ask them, are we doing another one? If they call me and they say, do you want to play Dusty again? I would love that.
How many of those would you do?
I just do them forever, man. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
How fun is voiceover?
Check start clearing.
It's the greatest.
Yeah.
It is the greatest. It's like...
People don't realize how into it you get to in the booth. Like, you're just standing there just doing a voice.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you're getting... I mean, you are acting. Like, you're... You get very... I'm sure from somebody who's already very physical and animated on stage, like, you're just in that booth just...
Yeah. It's funny. I'm sure there's outtakes, too, of like... I always like when you're in the booth and you're trying to, because you're trying to picture it. You're like, so what's happening now?
Yeah.
Or the whole
you have to know what's going on, by the way. Like, that helps to it.
And so it's funny when you're actually in the character, or if you hear other people in character and then they're swearing because they can't figure out the moment. Somebody's like, oh, yeah, we're all going to go. ah, fuck, guys, what is this? Are we out of the tunnel?
I want to see that movie. I want to see. I want to see it with all that audio left
that
in.
Animated. No, no, there are. There are clips of all of us, you know, all the actors. Everybody flips out in the booth once
for
in a
sure.
while or something.
Like Ray Romano when he was in Happy Nuts or Tree Fuck. What is it? No, Happy
Ice
no.
Age?
What is it? Ice Age, yeah.
One of the most popular.
I don't know. But there's probably a
take. I think Happy Nuts was cream of the week last week. Yeah, yeah.
But there's probably not a take of him being like, we're trying to get to this, fucking way. You know, and then you keep that in. With all the other stuff.
That would be funny just to actually animate, but as the character, like the character's
yes.
losing it in the scene. Right?
It's called like animal
like
breakdowns.
Moment, right?
Oh,
like,
wow.
But an animated.
Animated breakdowns.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great.
I mean, and now.
It should be a sketch. That should be a great animated show, by the way, where you just have.
Breakdowns?
Well, you just, I don't know, you have animated actors who are all animated animals. Like,
you ever watch,
all voiceover
you ever
actors.
Watch anime porn?
I've never watched anime porn.
No, but I've seen on the, you know, sometimes they have boxes of like Marge Simpson taking like,
yes.
to, you know, and I don't click on that, but I definitely look for a second and go, so that's what that episode would be like.
Right. But somebody, okay, so I've watched,
I haven't.
Watched anime porn.
Oh,
okay.
And by the way, I guess anime is different than animation porn.
Or anime, no, because yeah, anime
I'm thinking
is
of
like
cartoon porn.
Porn. Right? That's like, anime is like.
Yeah. I was like, do you mean have I seen SpongeBob fuck, you know, Dora?
That's what I mean.
There's, oh, you meant.
There's anime, because there's anime porn, and then there's, I was wrong, but it's there's anime porn animation.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
The point is somebody is in a booth.
Doing the.
Being like, okay, wait a second, I'm getting fucked by the devil. Okay. And does he come fire? Or how do you want me
does
to play this?
Does he come fire?
Right?
How do I play this?
You know, somebody's voicing.
Someone did that, yeah.
Somebody's coming in. All right, so you want this devil to be.
Am I coming fire? Or because she's going to respond differently than if I just come, you know, not fire.
That actor comes in. Yeah, I have some ideas for this scene.
Yeah, for sure.
What if I pull out and I destroy a city?
What if right before? Yeah,
but I just love the fact that for animated porn, the same way all the animators on planes are like meticulously making sure that every cell is complete and filled. There's some guy like adding a vein to a dick, going, "No, this yes. is this is really going to enhance the experience."
That's, and but if you look at these, and I'm sure now your listeners are going to be searching these online, but there are they're very
search away
beautifully rendered.
Yes.
Cocks and vaginas and animated porn.
They're making Pixar look like, you know, like.
Like Dixar. Hey!
Hey! We're done.
Oh, man. You know what? If I. That's that would be. In just in that moment, I wish there's somebody who I could look to and be like, hey, this Dan Cook guy's pretty cool, man. Can I vouch for him? Because.
How
thanks,
we follow.
That could be a show in itself, by the way. Like, we'll vouch for you.
We'll vouch for
where
you.
Where they put you in situations where you haven't been vouched for in a while.
Yeah. Hey, listen, this guy's cool. Let him in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's up to you to rise to the occasion.
Yeah.
I like that.
All right. So then, okay. So that's a lot going on then.
That's a few things that are popping.
You wake up each day with a
the fire, but awesome. Those are on the. I'm developing a TV show too. So a couple of things that.
Which again, by the way, having just a new hour, like hearing that. And we know what that entails. So that could be just what it was. And that would be fine because that's a lot. But again, and that gets me back to the Dane Cook's expectations.
Dane Cook on Dane Cook.
But I mean, I guess there you just answered it for us.
Expectations right now are I am, you know, after some really, you know, both insane high water moments and then like just, you know, personal stuff. I know we talked about that on the last podcast,
yep.
But the last couple of years have been the most, like really the most thrilling, almost the way I felt like when I first came up, when I first broke through after years on the road and, you know, just kind of out there trying to, you know, figure out, you know, kind of with the machete coming through the, am I ever going to get through this, you know,
right.
The bamboo of the industry. And the last couple of
your
years.
Your imagery, by the way, is perfect for Inside the Actor's Studio. Like, I'm telling you, a lot of people have great imagery.
We should totally send James Lipton this tape.
Again, like, when Johnny Depp was on there and I would do my Johnny Depp, but the phone would fucking start ringing, so I don't want to do that.
The weird ring ever. I almost wanted to ring again just so we can hear it. It gets higher and higher each time.
I cut you off and I feel so bad because I'm about to make a great point.
No. I mean, isn't that podcast is basically just people cutting each other off. That's all it really
is. No, good ones are. I think if you allow yourself for tangents, like we've done.
Well, you've got the power of the edit, my friend. Nobody needs to know what just happened. Nobody bury that shit off Zizek's Adam. Drive out to the desert and fucking bury that moment.
What are we talking about? Pauses. It never happened on that podcast.
And what were we talking about?
Why pregnant pause? Who? I wonder where that developed from.
Pregnant pause?
Yeah, that's what they call it. Like in television, there's that moment where, you know, it's not good for a radio, where it's that long kind of like moment of space, of air, where two people stare at each other.
Yeah.
And they don't allow that in television or films a lot now. It's like, right, you keep on moving.
ADD generation,
but you
can
watch an 80s movie, and it's like, you know, not an action movie, but like there's a lot of, you know, these kind of long stares, Telemundo kind of.
Sure.
But I wonder where pregnant pause came from.
Do you think that's because someone's about to say, like, Bobby, I'm pregnant, and then there's that, like,
yeah. Wow, Jesus Christ.
Check out
the best around.
Check out the big brain on Brad.
The tone of that, so we don't. Yeah.
You're a great guy.
There it is.
You said so many cool things. Slightly better than average.
That's a way better song, but honestly. You were talking about the last 2 years being so thrilling.
The last couple of years.
Has all the.
Honestly, no. The last couple of years have been what I would have hoped the whole, you know, kind of decade would have been, which is focus on the work. I had to unfortunately focus on a bunch of stuff that was really personal. And
you said on the last podcast you get about 4 months to enjoy the time that you finally, once SNL and everything was hitting, and then, right?
A lot of stuff happened right around 2005 and 6 with my folks and getting sick and stuff like that. But I had 5 great years of like, all the college stuff and building, like, man, just the after party was like then the morning party, and then like it was just work and fun. And then, you know, life happens, deal with all that stuff. Yeah. But it really took a toll, and that it wasn't like I didn't stop working, but the work was like an escape a lot of the time. And now the work is just great work again. It's really like, no, I wake up, I'm healthy, I'm feeling good, I've got great friends, I've got resources, I have, you know, new mentors, which I'd lost, unfortunately, at that, you know, time in my life. You know, I lost my mentor along with my parents. He had a stroke also at 69. So it's like, I kind of had to, build my team back up, you know, and also build, you know, be a better friend and be there for other people that like it, where it wasn't central to what I was looking for. And that's important for me to like get away from this and be regular and be vouched for. And so it was like, I want to go help my buddy build a canoe at Lake Tahoe or so. And getting away and doing things that were more just like living, enjoying life, no responsibilities of taking care of, you know, my parents that were ailing.
Yeah.
So the last like two and a half years have been just like, what do I want to do? What do I want to put this great energy that I'm back into?
Is it strange that you say you lose your mentors, but now looking at where you are in your career, a lot of comics, and rightfully so, look to you as a mentor. You're now that guy.
Yeah, I dig that. You know, we got our buddy Maddie up here. It's like this dude's
he's 19,
you know,
right?
Yeah, he's 19 years old.
Okay,
he's you know, young comic, and you know, of course, it's like you come to LA at 19, and it's almost like, get a helmet, get body armor, you know, learn to isolate yourself, don't listen so much. It's really
learn how
easy
to turn those no's into yes's.
Yeah, oh man, I like helping somebody like Matt to be able to say like, yes, you do need an attorney to look at that one piece of paper that you're about to sign.
Right.
You really do, because you have no idea that thing says all your content for 5 years is subject to da-da-da, some jargon that seems so simple and friendly.
Right.
No, nah, man. And so I do like that my, you know, my foibles can be turned into a plus for somebody, so they don't have to go through some of the, you know, some of the crap that I went through.
Do you? It's also not an easy role to step into, because I think a lot of people don't. I mean, Charles Barkley said it in a fucking Reebok commercial where he's like, I'm not a role model. So some people just get to a certain point and they're like,
your worst impersonation of the day.
I'm not a role model.
Oh, there we go.
Where's the phone?
Don't look at me. Dan Marley's a role model. Don't look at me. Hey, let me tell you something, Ernie. Kobe Bryant is. Let me tell you. Shaquille O'Neal. Okay, well, Akeem Olajuwon. Let me tell you. But
I only do impersonations now of people that nobody knows. So that really, like the woman that was my waitress the other day at Denny's, and she was like, so nice to see you, Dane. You look so good. You look so healthy. I'd be killing.
If people know who that is.
In middle America. Abby G needs to be on the. It's always the one letter on there. What are you, they're in like a relocation program working at Denny's. Like, Abby G, nobody can put their last name on this fucking tag.
I mean, that's a great bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, so someone comes out with a really killer Moons Over Miami, you may want to look that person up. It's for their own safety.
Send a Facebook friend request later on.
Yeah, exactly.
How many Abby G's are on Facebook?
Abby G, yo.
That's hilarious. We really appreciate you taking time.
Yeah, thanks for, you know, we just did this. Didn't we do this like 2 weeks ago? When were you guys here?
No, dude, that was quite honestly almost a year ago.
Oh, man. That's so crazy.
But you, and we've moved from one room of the house to the other. So yep. I think in about, we do this 29 more times. Wow. There was delayed reaction.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover. You know, if you're having a down and dumps day, pick up a Dane Cook topical cream. Yeah, it's cream of the day. Well, it's a cream that you can use any time of the week, but it's got topical little news anecdotes. Like George Clooney is now married is on the back of this cream.
I'm Dane Cook, and I vouch this ad.
Oh.
Thanks, man. Follow Dane on Twitter at Dane Cook. Check out Troublemaker October 17th on Showtime.
Cool.
At DaneCook.com for all your other deets and stay tuned.
All right. Pregnant pause.
So that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. We had laughs and stories. Now go listen to more episodes.
Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or AboutLastNightPodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamy Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.